Kinder oder keine? Kinder oder keine? Kinder oder keine? Kinder! Herzlich willkommen zu Kinder oder keine, ein Podcast über Gedanken, Erfahrungen, Einstellungen und Entscheidungen zum Thema Kinderkriegen, kinderfrei bleiben und Kinder begleiten. Ich bin Alissa und das Thema Kinder bekommen oder nicht, das beschäftigt mich heftig. Wenn ihr mehr zu mir und der Idee des Podcasts wissen wollt, könnt ihr euch die Minifolge zu sowas wie eine Einleitung anhören. Kinder oder keine? Kinder oder keine?
Hallo!
Kinder oder keine? Kinder oder keine? Kinder oder keine? Kinder oder keine? Heute spreche ich mit Rita. Rita und ich, wir kennen uns aus unserem gemeinsamen Studium. Wir studieren beide freie Kunst. Darauf gekommen, dass wir miteinander über das Thema auch Kinder bekommen oder Kinder oder keine sprechen können, sind wir in einem Plenum, wo ich auch das Podcast-Projekt vorgestellt habe und Rita daraufhin erzählt hat, dass sie aus einer unkonventionelleren Familienkonstellation kommt. Darüber werden wir heute auch sprechen. Ja, vielleicht magst du dich jetzt erstmal vorstellen, Rita. Und auch gerne mit den Stichwörtern du und Kinder und wer bist du, was beschäftigt dich so, was machst du?
Okay, very good. So I'm Rita. I come from Portugal. I am 24 and what occupies me is I'm trying to be an artist and I also work in two NGOs focused on, how to say this without a very triggered word, in mitigating social exclusion of migrants. And when it comes to children, I was until recently in a long-term relationship where my partner already had kids. And that was quite enlightening to understand what it entails to raise a kid, how much do you gain from it, and how much you also give up. Yeah, like it's also part of why I'm so happy to talk to you right now.
Wie viele Kinder hatte dein Partner?
He had two kids. One of them, my partner was already quite a bit older than me and he had already a teenage daughter. And when we started dating, when we ended our relationship, 9-year-old son.
Okay, du hast schon voll viel mitbekommen dort auch.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, with a teenager, of course, with my age and my life experience, I don't have the type of distance that would require to like properly parent. The type of resources I was bringing to the table were very much what I learned from my stepsisters. But with the way that a 7-year-old connects to you emotionally and the type of motherish things that they seek to look and see in you, that definitely gave me a bit of a better idea of what it would be like to be in that position.
Mm-hmm. Vielleicht möchtest du erstmal auch erzählen, aus was für einer Familiensituation du eigentlich kommst.
Mm-hmm. So my parents broke up when I was 4 because my father realized that he was homosexual and no matter how hard he tried, he couldn't really experience love with my mom in the way that he wanted to. And then when I was around 6 or 7, both of them found new partners. My father had like 2 more relationships than my mom since they broke up. But the experience was always still like a long-term relationship and your parents' partner. My mom has been with the same man since, and he already had 2 daughters, which really do feel like sisters, because when you meet when you're so young and do grow up together, I can't point to a palpable difference.
Das heißt, würdest du sagen, dass die neuen Lebensgefährten von deinen Eltern dann für dich auch wie andere Elternteile waren?
No. I would say that about my stepdad on my mom's side, but not exactly about the partners of my father, just because I also feel like they had a really hard time telling me why they broke up, like really, really, really. And so I remember when I was 9 or 10, I kind of put the pieces together and was like, okay, so sure, my father is gay. I just need to wait until he's okay with letting me know about it.
Das heißt, du wusstest es eigentlich, bevor er dir es erzählt hat.
I was always seeing him like looking really happy with his first proper boyfriend, and he was always looking really happy and really playful, and he like slept at the house when I went to see my father. And you know, like when you're 5 or 6 and you're doing sleepovers with your friends, you think, okay, this is just adults doing the same thing that I'm doing. But after a while, like when you start approaching your teens, of course you realize like, okay,
I get it. It's fine. I remember like none of that as a kid was at all complicated to manage. It just made me feel a bit bad for him that he didn't feel comfortable with himself enough to be able to let me know. And it actually ended up being my mom telling me instead of him. Like he just started openly like talking about himself as a gay man. Like I think it 1 or 2 years after I turned 18. Before, not really. Yeah. He knows I know, of course, but yeah, I think like he just came, Portugal was such a conservative country while he was growing up, and his environment was so conservative, and his professional life happened in such a conservative environment that he just felt that could be a burden for me somehow, which is just really, really unfair. And it never was.
Als du das gemerkt hast, war es nicht für dich irgendwie ein Problem, dass dein Vater Homo ist, sondern eigentlich nur das Problem, dass du dachtest, dein armer Vater, er kann nicht drüber sprechen.
Yeah, exactly. But just to conclude, like your first question, because you asked me if I ever felt any of my parents' partners as also my parents, and the reason why I think I didn't feel the partners of my father so much as also paternal figures, is because they were all younger and none of them had kids. So the way they related to me was different from the way that my stepdad on my mom's side related to me. It was more, I don't want to say non-committal, but like this sense of sacrifice that you feel from your parents. I didn't feel that from them. I just felt like they thought I was this cute kid that's really nice to play with and do homework with and like dress her up and do her hair and stuff like this. Yeah, like my father's first partner was a hairdresser, so they had a lot of fun with my head. Or then they're just like this moody teenager just looking really confused. But not, yeah, I don't know. I remember feeling like there was maybe, because they never went through this parenting experience before, there was a barrier after which they were not committing. And with my mom's partner, with whom I had a much more complicated relationship, but I always felt like this type of investment in who I am as a person, you know, that he didn't feel like a bystander, you know, he didn't feel circumstantial. He felt like he was really there for whatever comes. And this also, like this experience with my ex, really made me empathize with my parents' previous partners, because there is a part of it that is so hard when it's completely unknown and when you have never been there before. Like there is a part of having kids around that constricts your space and constricts also your romantic space. And I think when you're not used to that sacrifice, there's also a part of you that just can get a bit tired, you know? So yeah, like it was a funny coming full circle in this relationship. And also after my father's last partner, after he broke up with him, didn't have so much more contact with me or try to have contact with me and didn't try to say goodbye. So I knew I wanted to do that differently with my partner's kids.
Und das waren auch längere Beziehungen. Du hattest gemeint, zwei Beziehungen von deinem Vater, ne? Die er dann hatte, die du kennengelernt hast. Und mit denen hast du beiden keinen Kontakt mehr.
No. The first one, I was really, really tiny. I was like 5 or 6 until I was like 8, maybe. The second one, they were together for 10 years. So I knew him the end of my childhood, all throughout adolescence and most of university. So like when I think of if I would call someone a stepdad from my father's side, it would be this last relationship.
Und hast du zusammen gelebt eigentlich mit den Kindern von deinem Stiefvater und deiner Mutter oder mit deinem Vater und seinen Freunden?
It was very shared. My parents had a really good divorce, which is also, I have to say, such a privilege. It is such a privilege to have parents that understand that they're just not right for each other anymore and to try to, you know, still break up with love and support for each other. So they knew that they wanted to share their time with me somewhat fairly, and I spent 4 or 5 days per week at my mom's place and 2 or 3 days per week at my father's place. Yeah, I had my school books and my stuff at my mom's place, and I always went there first after school, but then I spent 2 or 3 nights a week at my dad's place.
Diese Aufteilung, ein bisschen so wie deine Mutter hatte eigentlich die unangenehmere Position mit den Schulsachen und so, und dein Vater eher dann die Urlaubsposition oder nicht?
I think my mom is a much more strict person overall. And the things that felt like Urlaub in my parents was more like housework, like at my father's, was more like housework or bedtime, like that. In my father, it was a bit more relaxed. He was more comfortable with a bit more chaos around him, I think. My mom really isn't. So that's what felt like ruley.
But I was always quite good at doing my homework alone.
Yeah, I think they both helped me somewhat equally when it came to homework. Definitely when it came to rules, my mom was more the person, but it also comes from her, like who mm-hmm. she is as a person. Like if they were together, it wouldn't have been that different.
Und haben sie dir eigentlich, als du sechs warst und sie sich getrennt haben sie dir gesagt, was Gründe dafür sind? Oder hast du irgendwas verstanden? Weißt du das noch?
No, it was really, they told me that, because my father was doing his master's in Manchester, like the 2 years before. That I think was really hard on my mom, and that I think it was the Aufteilung.
Not so much like afterwards, but like in this first infancy thing, you're leaving your 1 year and a half year old baby and your wife to just go study, and she gets everything else on top of her job. Like this I think is tough. So I was already not used to seeing my dad around so much when they broke up. And then when my mom told me, what they explained to me was like that he just, you know, like I was a really weird child and I really liked playing alone. Just a lot. And so they just explained to me like, no, like you're very much like daddy, and my daddy also likes to live alone better than living with people. But I think they were just like so sad that to have to then face like this mediating for your child was too much for them. So this was the explanation that I got, and then I just saw my mom really sad all the time and like trying to cry without me seeing her. And I can't imagine what an impossible position it was for her to just live with this tiny human you're responsible for and not even be able to tell them the truth mm-hmm. when it's the truth that they have no prejudice against. There's nothing burdensome about it.
Das hat ja vielleicht halt auch was, es könnte zumindest auch was mit dir machen, wenn, und hat es bestimmt auch auf irgendeine Weise, dass das nicht gesagt wird, wie es ist einfach was Normales, dein Papa möchte jetzt mit anderen Männern zusammen mm-hmm. sein, oder?
Yeah, I think it really comes from the social context where they grew up. Mm-hmm. And also, like, I was in a Catholic school at the time, so the environment of the people they were talking to then was really homophobe. I really think most of it came from a place of trying to protect my father. It didn't come so much from an internalized homophobic place of them. It came more from knowing that in the environment in which they were, this being known, and kids talk because kids are innocent, would probably hurt him more. And this was already such a difficult thing to do that it was not necessary.
Und deine Eltern, sind die religiös eigentlich?
Not so much. My father is an agnostic and has been since I remember him. And my mom was somewhat Catholic when I was a kid, but now she's just like this hippie spiritual, the universe talks to me lady, you know, just like really believing in coincidences and like just stuff like that. She prays sometimes, but it's not, she's not this person full of faith for religion. She's just full of faith for something bigger than her.
Mm-hmm. Und hatten deine Eltern danach, nachdem sie sich getrennt hatten, hatten sie dann eine freundschaftliche Ebene, würdest du sagen? Und haben sie das heute noch?
So cute. Again, like the best divorce I know of, really. My mom said something really beautiful about the entire experience. It was like when he told her, she was like, and I saw him just like so down and looking so lost. And this is the person I love. If I love him, I have to try my best to make this as easy for him as possible. And so she said that she went through the entire divorce just putting my father and my best interests at heart, because she was like, I don't know what I'm doing, but this is like a little light at the end of the tunnel, and if I follow it, I will arrive at a good place. So she texted me, actually, like I was talking to my dad on Father's Day, and then we both got a text from her at the same time, going like, happy Father's Day. I couldn't have picked a better father for the daughter. I wouldn't trade for anything. And when they need like pep talks or to feel good about each other or make like tough decisions, they still call each other because they're like best friends in university and like they've known each other for two-thirds of their lives. So it's a really, yeah, I'm not sure I can say that I grew up with examples of relationships around me that I would like to have. But I definitely grew up with an example of an end of a relationship that I would like to have, you know?
Das ist schön gesagt, ja. Das heißt, als du es erfahren hast, weißt du das noch, ob du als Kind so Traurigkeit empfunden hast oder warst du auch einfach, okay, das ist jetzt, was ist und jetzt lebe ich halt 3 Tage bei meiner Mutter und 3 Tage bei meinem Vater und...
I was a bit sad that they weren't together, but I think it's just because, I don't know, in hindsight, I think kids measure their identity so much through their parents. And to have like this type of split identity in a way, like split referentials, was sometimes a bit weird to navigate. But, and it made me sad to see my mom so sad. And I knew that she wasn't sad when he was around, so this was one thing. But also,
it definitely became more sad once my mom got into a relationship that wasn't healthy at all. Her relationship with my stepdad was quite abusive. Actually, every time anyone asks me about my family constellation, this is what I say, like, it's absolutely the same to have two stepdads or one stepdad and one stepmom. What is really not nice is growing up in an abusive household. Like, that is the thing that really makes you sad. That is the thing that really screws you up. Who your parents love, as long as it's healthy love, it's all the same.
Ja. Du hattest keine Geschwister, oder? Also keine direkten. Und du hast dann auch nicht mit den Kindern von deiner Mutter, ihrem neuen Partner, zusammengelebt?
Yeah, no, we lived together.
Ah,
yeah, we lived together. So they really do feel like Geschwister, like they feel like sisters. There is no, I can't feel a difference. My stepdad's ex-wife died with cancer. So he was a single dad. I was just not with them when I was with my dad. The rest of the time was always together.
Trotzdem hast du lieber alleine gespielt und so, oder?
I don't know. I think it depended on the times. Like, for sure, sometimes it was really nice to play with them. And I think it was also good to, like, get me out of my only child shell, you know? Because that's where I was living until I was six. So this was really nice. It started getting a little bit stressful when the toxic dynamic between my mom and my stepdad started escalating, because then you're like this 8-year-old feeling responsible for these tiny kids, and it doesn't always feel like playing together. Sometimes it feels like distracting them from something you don't want them to be scared of. Yeah, and so I know that, like, at points in my childhood, I kind of indirectly resented them for having to be handling this, you know, for having to be taking care of them and distracting them and finding funny games to play. Then I started also really cherishing, like, some time alone when I was with my dad. But also, I think because I always got these 2 days a week with my dad, there was always some balance, there was always some breathing space, and I could always appreciate them having other kids to play with.
Ach, 2 Tage warst du bei deinem Vater nur. Mm-hmm.
It oscillated a bit. Sometimes it was 3, but it was never like a full week or half, like, or 4 or 5 days. It never completely inverted.
Und weißt du noch, wie du das empfunden hast, dieses von einem Platz zu dem anderen?
I think, like, it was not just from one place to the other. It was 3 places, because my mom always kept her own apartment. So we were spending, like, 2 days a week in her apartment, 3 days a week in my stepdad's apartment, and 2 days a week at my dad's, which just means I'm really good at packing. But I don't know, like, it was mostly tiring because of the pendulum, like, because of the commute to then get to school. Because if I stayed with my dad or my stepdad, it was like waking up at 6:30, which when you're like 8 or 9 is not fun. Like, it's not what you feel like doing. But it wasn't so bad.
Ich finde das voll interessant, dass deine Mutter auch einfach dann alleine weiterhin wohnen wollte. Hat sie das beibehalten, bis du groß bist? Wohnt sie jetzt mit ihrem Partner zusammen?
More or less. I don't think she wanted to live alone. She just wanted to not give up her place. And obviously the relationship was never giving her enough security for her to give up her place. From very early on, it wasn't giving her that security. And my stepdad was, in hindsight, like, still mourning the death of his ex-wife when he got together with my mom. So that he still kind of wanted the house to not feel hers, which I can totally get why it was... Logistically speaking, completely irrational. You know, you're just, like, bringing everyone from one place in one night and everyone to the other in the other night. Like, it's exhausting. And the commute we're having to do in that direction, they're having to do in the opposites. But emotionally, I completely get it. Like, you don't feel like giving up your home to then just completely immerse yourself in a life that doesn't feel welcoming for you.
Mm-hmm. Und vielleicht sind Kinder da auch einfach relativ anpassungsfähig, ne? Also ich denke mir gerade auch, dass dieses Ding von, wenn du es halt nicht anders kennst als Kind, dann ist es für dich halt vielleicht normal, zwischen 3 Plätzen hin und her zu wandern. Und wir haben jetzt halt so viel Vorstellungen irgendwie, wie ein Familienleben irgendwie aussehen sollte im perfekten Sinne. Aber ich glaube, dass Kinder da oft vielleicht relativ unkomplizierter sind.
Yeah, I think for kids it is fairly simple in the end. Like, the complicated things really are the emotional things, like, or the psychological things, the logistical things. As long as you feel like the physical environment is safe, there's not going to be aggression towards you, you're going to have food, you're going to be warm. It's really not that complicated. Sometimes it's a bit of a hassle when you start being a teenager and you want your freedom and to go around this always switching between places that are not connected by public transportation in the same way. Like, it's annoying, but that's the only point when it starts being annoying. When you're a child, it's fairly fine. I remember my mom kept like cookies or a book or like a blanket for like in the car for when we were going back, like to bring me to school in the morning. And I remember like doing my homework in the middle of traffic and like just hearing her talk about like Portuguese history. And those are still kind of like warm memories, you know? Could also still be a time for connection. It just depends how you take it.
Hast du mal mit deiner Mutter darüber gesprochen, wie das für sie eigentlich war oder mit deinem Vater später?
In which part? Like the post-divorce in their life post-divorce or the divorce itself? Post-divorce. Yeah, no, for sure. Also because I was the oldest kid and I lived alone with my mom for a while before she found a new partner. I was quite, I think you call it in English, parentalized. Like you start being demanded adult responsibilities when you're still a kid. I always found myself very much as a mediator of their fights and their issues.
Ich wollte eigentlich fragen, wie das für deine Mutter und dein Vater nach der Trennung auch stressig das war, dann sozusagen mit einem Kind zu sein, alleine und so.
Yeah, my mom was always pretty open about it actually. She always said that also partially because of this parentalization dynamic. She always said that it was nice to hear my point of view and it was like cozy to have me around. And of course it was more work, but that she appreciated having me there, like having another human that she loves unconditionally there for her, like so to say. She complains a bit, though, that my father was not, because she said that she didn't want to restrict the days that he could come and pick me up, because he could come whenever he wanted. And after a while, she realized that you just get too distracted with his life, and this she complained about. And she also complains that, like, throughout my childhood, he would often, not super often, it wasn't something that happened all the time, but if his partner was really stressed with a deadline for, like, a schoolwork or something, like, he would switch the day in which he stayed with me last minute. And this is something that she complained about, like, he knows he can do this because I'm reliable, but this is not very comfortable.
Und was haben deine Eltern gearbeitet? Also, was war ihr Beruf?
My mom is a judge and my dad is a, I don't know, project manager in bank financial stuff. So like he started as a lawyer, that's how they met, but then he did his master's in Manchester and got a nurse job. So like auf jeden Fall both busy people. It's not like he can say she has a much less stressful position. I remember my mom working until after midnight systematically throughout my childhood or waking up at 4 a.m. to finish like something for the next day.
Und war das etwas, wo sie sich auch bei dir darüber dann beschwert hat, dass so mein Leben ist so stressig und hast du das als Kind abbekommen, dass du gemerkt hast?
Of course, totally. But it's also, I don't know, I think it's okay. I think it's okay to realize that you're not always the center of your parents' lives all the time. You know, and this really gave me that. Of course, it doesn't excuse that talking to your kid in an overstressed way or in a mean way just because you had a difficult day. But to understand that sometimes you are okay without having your parents make you their absolute priority, it's just healthy. Because ultimately, we're not the center of it. Like, we're not the center of the world. That's how we're going to become adults. I think it was really sobering and really fine. Of course, as a kid, especially because kids are sold this narrative that they're the most important thing in their parents' lives and na-na-na. When you feel it, sometimes you're a bit like, this isn't fair. But you don't pull a tantrum. You just know that's what it is in that moment. And then that moment passes and maybe you'll get, you know, a special parent date with your father. Like, you'll do something cute together or, you know.
Du hast recht. Ich glaube, das ist auch wichtig, darüber nachzudenken, wenn man so darüber nachdenkt, ob man Kinder bekommen möchte oder Kinder begleiten möchte oder nicht, sich klar zu machen. Es muss nicht so laufen, dass dieses Kind all deine Aufmerksamkeit in jeder Sekunde bekommt. Und also ich bin selber auch ganz viel nur mit meiner Mutter aufgewachsen eigentlich und habe auch das Gefühl, dadurch habe ich halt voll mitbekommen, auch dass sie ihre Zeiten brauchte und ihre Dinge auch machen musste. Und wenn man vielleicht einem Kind die ganze Zeit Aufmerksamkeit gibt, dann könnte sich das Kind ja auch daran gewöhnen und das später halt auch im Leben mit sich rumtragen. Ne?
Yeah, and it's also a little bit unfair on the kids. Because I know some of my friends actually grew up like this, and they say that they felt so much responsibility for knowing that their decisions would be the final decisions.
which I find a really interesting perspective, because we just think, no, you're spoiled and you pull a tantrum. But they say like, yeah, sure, but you also don't want all the adults to always be expecting your word to make their decisions. Like, this is not a responsibility that you as a kid want.
Und weißt du, ob du selber mal Kinder bekommen möchtest?
Definitely, like, that's not at all a question. I'm not sure if I will, because I also think you can have a perfectly nice, fulfilling life without kids. And I know that I need a stable artistic practice in my life to feel like myself. So I know that, especially with the gendered education in which our generation still grew up in, it is not a given that I will get a partner that will allow that. But for myself, I see so many people transcend themselves as parents and learn how to give their best and learn how to be curious about the world again through the eyes of their children that are discovering it for the first time, that it really feels like in the right conditions, not pushed towards it, it is a beautiful thing. And if I just think about it in a very selfish perspective, it's such an insane thing to do with your body, like a full other human. It's so absolutely insane. Like, how could you not, like, it's almost childish, but like, how could you not want to experience that? It's insane. Even if, like, I don't mean want to experience it in the sense of like, how could you not want to be a mother? This is not what I mean. But like, this childish curiosity of like, what if, you know, like, of wanting to poke at funny stuff. Like, this is such a funny stuff to poke at. How? What? There was nothing and then there's something and that something is a person. What?
Aber ja. Es ist auch unheimlich irgendwie, ne? Also ich habe auch mit Menschen gesprochen, die das einfach, diese Vorstellung schon auch gruselig finden. Dass da, und ich glaube, das ist bei mir aber auch so, dass ich das so interessant finde und so neugierig bin darauf. Aber das Ding ist eben auch, wenn diese Person dann auf die Welt kommt, dann ist sie da und dann braucht sie alles Mögliche.
I think kids are far more flexible than what we give them the credit for. You know, but this is, I think, a bit my conclusion with my growing up, we're far more flexible than what we give ourselves credit for. Our kids are not so fragile. I think what we really should think as prospective parents is handling our own shit. Like, just handling your own shit, because it's the shit that you don't handle that ends up traumatizing your kids. And it's the shit that you don't handle that ends up making you feel like your kid is a burden, because you're just projecting the inner homework you didn't do on a person that is just there and has no fault. And for me, I think that's why this mapping of what do I need to do to feel whole as a person before I even consider this is important. And this was why I ended my relationship, by the way. Like, my partner really wanted kids, and he is 45. So for him, it was like, the time is fairly soon. I don't want to be a grandfather father, and I love being a father and I love you, and like, the reasonable thing for me is for you to come to Portugal right now and just spend here as much time as you can and start like really planning a family. And for me it was like, I don't feel ready. I would feel like that step would be robbing me of the beautiful things I feel like I need to leave right now, and just turning all those beautiful things that you're proposing to me a burden.
Und das ist ja eigentlich auch nicht Akzeptanz von deiner künstlerischen Praxis.
Not at all. So this like terrified me. It's like, if you manage to put... Oh no, but you can also be an artist in Portugal. Like, baby, Portugal, the center of the Kunstmarkt. Like, it's already difficult in Germany, where the middle class is fairly educated and fairly bright. Like, almost impossible in Portugal to just try to start your art career from scratch. And I've been there, like, I know the environment. I know what curiosity brought me here. It was curiosity for my practice that got me here. And I don't feel like I fulfilled it yet. So it really, to hear him say this and understand that he was so unaware of what my needs as a person were, also made me realize that the support I would need to be making this decision, what we were talking about earlier, wouldn't be there.
Hat er selber einen künstlerischen Hintergrund?
Ja, he was an actor and screenwriter, but meanwhile he started again slowly working into NGOs, and now he's working for this institute also concerning the study of migration. So he deviated from that, which I found also so ironic, because he had kids early, so he needed to find a more stable job than being an actor. And so he gave that up, and he kind of feels like it's feasible to give it up, but it's not something you can impose on another person.
Und denkst du, dass Kinder bekommen dich auch in der Kunst beeinflussen würde? Und denkst du, dass es gut möglich ist? Kennst du Menschen, die das gut hinbekommen, Kinder bekommen und Kinder zu begleiten und trotzdem an ihrer Kunst dran zu bleiben?
In an older generation of Portuguese artists, it's super common. Also because of the Catholic influence and the how family-centered life was. So there's like some really, now they're old ladies at like 80-something, but there's some really wonderful Portuguese artists that were also mothers and whose career, like, you know, I'll be lucky if I have like a tenth of that, you know? But something that their kids say is that they knew art came first. This raises for me like a bit of a question mark, because I get that imperative. I get when sometimes like your kid is crying for attention because he wants you to play with them and you just shut the door of the studio and you keep working. And sometimes I'm afraid that also raise these humans that feel unimportant. But on the other hand, I had a similar experience with my mom and I didn't feel less loved and it didn't kill me. I can understand that it's not exactly the same, but she also lived law and she's really idealistic when it comes to being a judge. It really comes from this metaphysical need of seeing justice in the world. So she really lived everything that she was like having to judge and all the people she was having to face, and she's super empathetic, so it was also very emotionally exhausting. So it wasn't like just seeing someone in an office job, it was also seeing someone fulfill their calling. I know it sounds a bit cheesy, but you know what I mean? Like fulfill a deep urge.
Ich glaube, ich möchte voll gerne mehr noch über KünstlerInnen lernen, die Kinder haben und die ihre Kunst weitergemacht haben.
Kito Style.
Stimmt, das stimmt. Und gleichzeitig denke ich mir, es wäre halt schön, Orte zu haben, die kinderinklusiver sind. Und dass es dann halt von Anfang an mehr die Möglichkeit gibt, auch KünstlerInnen und Elternteil zu sein.
Mm-hmm. But I think there we kind of get to, you know, that, you know, common realization that the spaces we inhabit as women were designed for subjectivity models that are masculine.
Ich denke auch, dass diese Orte einfach, wenn sie Eltern- und kindergerechter gestaltet würden, dass es viel einfacher wäre, auch während der Studienzeit zum Beispiel ein Kind zu bekommen. Und ich würde mir eigentlich wünschen, dass auch das möglich ist, weiter Kunst zu studieren und Kunst zu machen und aktiv zu sein und ein Kind zu haben.
I think it is with a good support network, but I just remembered someone's story. My professor at UTK had a kid while she was doing her diploma, and she said something so... I remember asking her this also about this topic, like after I finished my like my last year at UTK, like, you know, how did you manage high kanana? And she was like, you know, you start valuing your time so much more and being so much more smart about it, that I didn't feel it was a loss to have a kid. I feel like, okay, if I have like these 5 hours in this day to be in the studio, I'm really there and they're really for me.
Das hat mir auch eine Kunststudentin, mit der ich ein Interview geführt habe, die hat genau das gleiche gesagt, dass sie einfach viel fokussierter war und nicht mehr so la la la, jetzt sitze ich hier, sondern jetzt ist es, schläft das Kind, jetzt mache ich was. Und, und Akashi hat mir auch erzählt, dass ihn die Kinder ganz doll inspirieren, auch in seiner künstlerischen Arbeit. Und ich glaube, das kann auch super wertvoll sein. Und ich glaube, man darf halt wirklich nicht sauer werden auf die Kinder, wenn sie ihre Zeit und Aufmerksamkeit brauchen, weil sie von dir weg sind. Sondern ich glaube, das ist dann schon eine Entscheidung. Okay, ich weiß, ich werde dem Kind ganz viel Aufmerksamkeit auch schenken müssen. Und die wird schon auch weggehen von der künstlerischen Arbeit. Also ich glaube, es ist schon anders als davor einfach. Ich glaube, du kannst nicht einfach so weitermachen.
Yeah, I get what you mean. I really think it comes it depends a lot on the support network. And sometimes for people who came from single parents households, which I felt sometimes like I did, you know, like it was a very wobbly constellation, it really does come down to how good your support network is. You know, because if you think you and your partner alone with a kid, then this is a lot. But if you think, yeah, sure, but there's grandparents, there's friends, there's uncles by blood or by love, you know, like there's so many people that can take your kid for an afternoon. And of course, if you're the only person, it is a compressive factor. But I don't know, like what you said about Takashi reminded me of this interview that I read with a Portuguese sculptor, like when I was at school. And at the end of the interview, like it was like a tiny booklet, and he was talking about like his family life and how his family life translates to his work. And he said that like having kids was such a big, like such a big jump in his work, because there were so many things that as a person that has been alive for 30 or 40 years, he was blind to, that seeing them get discovered for the first time, like seeing these curious eyes on the world get discovered for the first time, was just making him so much more sensitive to the beauty that is to be a human and to be able to translate it. Yeah, and before he actually wasn't that well known, and I felt this was like a really beautiful thing to read, but then he also said, but it's really important to have the right partner by your side. And this is coming from a man, you know, and he was saying like, weaving compliments to his wife, saying like, she's so wonderful, understands how sensitive it is to make art like so well, la la la.
And she also an artist?
Exactly not. Yeah. So this was the part where I was like, okay, I get it. There's truth in this, of course, but it comes down to getting the right circumstances together.
Und denkst du auch manchmal nach, gerade auch, weil du ja ein bisschen was in die Richtung kennst, dass wenn du ein Kind bekommst, dass du es nicht in einer Liebesbeziehung bekommst oder mit mehr Menschen vielleicht auch zusammen?
Mm.
Also co-parenting modelle?
I don't know. I think it had to be a love situation for me. But this is my very personal... this is already really personal. I'm sure it's possible for other people in other contexts. It didn't have to be a love, a romantic love relationship. But if it was with friends, I would have to love the hell out of those friends and really want them in my life forever and really know them. You know, like the prerequisites that I have for like a romantic partner to have kids with are the same I would have for friends. Exactly. You know, just like thinking that the morals of these people are wonderful, that there are qualities they have that like that I would love my kid to grow up around. Like the requirements would be the same and the level of safety in that relationship would have to be the same. Well, I'll definitely, like, I'm going to be honest, like, it's like the traditional sign of my mind. I don't make that... Vorstellung, like I'm not usually thinking like, what if I had kids with like this or that friend of mine? Actually, no, I have done that. Okay, I take it back. I have done that actually. Yeah, yeah, I was talking to a friend of mine the other day exactly about it. Yeah, no, because like we super, super love each other and it was just like, yeah, we were talking about it, like we don't think we fit as romantic partners, but we just went like, but yeah, but would you have my kids? And I was like, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I would also have your kids. So, but again, because even though we don't fit each other's romantic needs, the thinking of the other person has ethical standards that are solid enough for me to want to be around, affection that I feel is really safe, and a family sense that I can relate to. Because it does come down to family, whether it's romantic or not. It still has to be there. And for instance, like that wasn't really there with my former partner. Even though romantically there's lots of, like it was in very many aspects a very fulfilling relationship, like... I remember thinking often, like, I wouldn't like my kids to be scolded this way, or I wouldn't like this type of example handling that situation or that situation. So, yeah.
Und du hast ihn ja sogar auch schon mit Kindern erlebt.
Exactly, it's not abstract.
Jetzt muss ich einen Bogen machen, sozusagen, weil ich gerade auf meinen Zettel geschaut habe. Und mich würde auch nochmal voll interessieren, wie die Reaktionen aus dem Umfeld von dir waren, als du klein warst und andere Kinder gesehen haben, dass deine Familienkonstellation nicht diese typische ist. Kannst du dich daran erinnern?
I can, but I remember feeling this very often. Like I was in this private Catholic school. Like I didn't feel like the other kids' reactions were the real world. You know, it felt like everyone was fairly similar, with fairly similar experiences, with a fairly similar outlook on life. So I remember that, like, really not caring that much. Especially when you got into adolescence and we had like this Sunday school mandatory class you had to go to. And there, like when you're 12 or 13, they start trying to do sex ed, but it's really just about like God and abstinence and everything is a sexual perversion. And of course, being gay will get you into hell. And you're just listening to all those people talk and talk about like how kids that are born out of gay parents are degenerate. And you're just like, well, I know you're stupid. Like, I know it's your loss. You know, you don't even have the space to get angry. You know, it's so ridiculous. It's like, it's so incredibly ridiculous that you don't even have the space to feel angry. You just feel like, okay, I hope you change your mind one day.
Aber das ist, da musst du vielleicht auch schon irgendwie auf eine Weise stark gewesen sein, weil das sind ja ältere Leute und viele Leute, die dir dann so einen Mist verzapfen.
I think it's really important there to like teach kids how to trust their gut, you know? And like, if you trust that you are happier in your father's home than in the home of like your mom in an abusive relationship, this is so empirical and so unavoidable that whatever they want to tell you, you know, it's bullshit. And I mean, I remember I never told anyone in my school that my father was gay precisely because of this, because I, like, I see this environment. I don't need to tell them. I started feeling a little bit sad that I was always having to present my stepdad as a friend of the family, because I knew that, like, before the adoption law was legalized in Portugal, I would be the closest between me and the dog would be the closest thing he would have to parenthood. And so, like, this was a bit painful. I remember not telling even friends of mine that had, like, some homophobe views about it.
Du hast ja gerade schon gesagt, dass du das lange eben niemandem in der Schule erzählt hast und so. Aber als du dann Bescheid wusstest und dein Vater auch offen mit dir gesprochen hast, hast du da so Homofeindlichkeit wahrgenommen von anderen Eltern oder von deinem Umfeld? Oder bist du irgendwann auch offener einfach damit umgegangen?
In my Catholic school, no, of course not. But I also remember like having this really strong feeling that even friends of mine that were homophobic or it had homophobic views, like it wasn't always like, oh, non-straight people are wrong. Like it wasn't always like this, but it was like, I mean, I find it kind of weird and like it can happen, but just like not around. Yeah, but imagine if your father was, I remember hearing this from like a really close friend. Imagine if your father was like this, like, you know, I think I would love him less. And I remember thinking, because then you all, but the thing is, I know this sounds weird, but being there taught me so much tolerance, because you just realize how many people think stupid things. And to just, you know, I know what you're saying is so far away from the truth that I don't feel affected. And to be able to be this person in your environment that is showing that it can be different, like that he's talking, because like, of course you contradict these ideas. You don't go, oh, yeah, yeah. No, you contradict it. Come on, don't be silly. You'd see, it's always your father. To be the person that's always saying this slowly over time actually shifts opinions. And after I finished high school and I knew that she didn't have contact with people that could actually hurt my father, I told her and her reaction was like, oh, huh, funny. It makes absolutely no difference at all in how I look at him. So like it gave me like so much to have this person that has like maybe a less conventional constellation and to have the insight that it gives you and to have the chance to share it, to share the insight without having to share the circumstances, see that it slowly changes the minds of the people close to you, is so rewarding. And it gives you like also so much hope in our power to transform each other and make each other less ignorant. Because of course I'm also ignorant in other things and there's other people doing this for me, you know? And that's something that pains me, like it's also easy for me because I'm not the gay person. It's easy for me because I don't have to take it too personally. I can totally understand how when you're the one personally hearing these things about you, it's much harder to have this level of tolerance.
Ich glaube, eben mich hätte total verletzt, wenn jemand schlecht über meine Eltern spricht.
Hm.
Und dieses, was du hier vorher auch meintest, dir tat es voll leid, dass dein Vater damit nicht offen sein konnte. Und ich glaube, also bei mir war es auch voll oft so, wenn ich wusste, meiner Mama geht's nicht gut, das hat mich so, ich war da total empathisch schon als Kind. Und ich glaube, wenn wer so schlecht über meine Eltern reden oder geredet hat, dann fand ich das ganz, ganz schlimm und hatte immer das Gefühl, ich muss sie jetzt verteidigen oder so.
But it was never about my parent, my father, because no one, they were telling bad things about gay people in general, but they didn't know that my father was included in this realm.
Und du hast ihn da einfach nicht reingesteckt. Du hast von Anfang an gedacht, mein Papa, der ist toll.
Yeah.
Egal, was ihr sagt.
Of course. Like, and that's the thing, though. Experiencing loving homosexual relationship on one side and an abusive heterosexual relationship on the other really makes it clear that the important thing is the health of the relationship and the love you're given, not the gender of the people involved. You know, this is so empirical as a kid that there's no way around it. That whatever you're saying, it's just like, yeah, whatever, quatsch. It's such a stronger experience at home that whatever people want to say at school out of their very straight Catholic normative families is like, okay, yeah, it's coming from a place of ignorance. I don't have to take it seriously.
Mm-hmm. Gab es sowas wie Konkurrenz zwischen deinen Eltern oder?
No, there was no. Mm-mm.
Und für dich war das manchmal so wie, oh, ich möchte jetzt aber lieber bei dem einen Elternteil sein oder bei dem anderen oder so, wie dass du eine Person lieber mochtest gerade als die andere?
No, I had it at some point, like when my stepdad got too abusive and my mom kept asking me for help to either get back together with him or to mediate fights, which is just like, it's not a position to put a kid in. And I remember at some, but it was really like, again, just handle your shit before you become a parent, you know, like too much trauma and issues that's mediating his self-image. Like at some point, I remember that when I was 16, I just said to my mom, like, you know, this is your choice. And you know, I don't agree with it. Like, I love my stepdad, by the way. This isn't coming from a place of hate. And we had the one of the best stepdaughter, stepfather relationships I know. And a lot of the things he allowed himself with my mom, he didn't with me.
Obwohl and, er so abusive mit deiner Mutter war,
yeah,
hat er trotzdem
mit yeah, Beziehung. Super. It was hard to understand where the abuse started because my mom also had like some really toxic ways of getting along with people. And so it wasn't so crystal clear when you're a kid. Slowly it started to be clear for me that, like, you are taking this out of proportion to my stepdad. But I had the space to communicate it because our relationship was good. I remember telling him, like, you are valuing the wrong things and the way that you're trying to handle your frustrations is just making all of us really miserable. But I could do this because I had this relationship with him. And to have a person that gives you the space and listens and does try to do things a bit differently, it really blurs the lines. And I remember at some point it just slowly, it really started becoming like unacceptable to me. And I started telling my mom, like, I really think you should leave. I think this is making you too miserable and it's making us miserable. Like, no, but I love him, but it's family, but this, but this, but that. And when I was 16, I told her, like, okay, I can't do this anymore. Like, I can't keep feeling like my job in this family is to hold your bomb from exploding. So I understand this is a choice you're making for your life. It's not a choice I make for mine. I'm moving in with my father. Yeah, that was that. So there was a clear preference, but just not so much about the people, more about the environment and how the people are choosing not to change the environment. That was also one of the things, like, I remember telling them both, you can't keep repeating the same recipe of, you know, breaking up, like getting together, being really in love for like a couple of weeks or a month, then starting slowly being really abusive, then just having these crazy fights where you're yelling for hours or throwing stuff around and we're just like staying in the room in a corner waiting for dinner that never arrives. And then I'm picking up the pieces that are left of you, mom. Like this isn't a thing. You need to just both get therapy and do things differently or break up. And the fact that they didn't was like, okay, I get that it is your choice to keep banging against the wall. But then there was a preference and then there was a definite advantage in having like separated parents with a good divorce. Because then I knew I could make this choice with my father still being compassionate to my mom. You know, like not using it against her. Being like, I'm still here for you, Rita's mom, but I'm also here for my child.
Ich finde es ganz schön stark, mit 17 zu sagen, das lasse ich mir nicht mehr bieten, ich gehe.
Sure, maybe, I don't know. At the time I didn't feel so strong. I actually felt that like a part of me felt really guilty for leaving my sister behind because I don't have a choice. I have the choice because I'm the daughter of the other person. But we had really different experiences of this abuse, actually. Like, because I was closer to my mom, I got the full picture. But because they were closer to their dad, they tried to, like, downplay it. And because we all tried to protect them, you know, we all tried to, like, not really show it to them. They still, like, sometimes were talking about fights. Sometimes they're telling me, like, a really funny story about, like, that one time that, like, they were going to come for dinner, but then my mom was really angry and she threw everything away from the door, like, as they were leaving and they just went back to their father's place. And I'm thinking, well, then she was crying in the kitchen floor for 3 hours, you know? Like, that was the part that was difficult, just the feeling guilty for them.
Und kannst du sagen, in welchem Sinne abusive oder was sozusagen waren die Themen dieser Streits?
Nothing. It's never like fights that last hours are never about the topic. You know, like there's no reason to be yelling at a person for 5 hours. Like ich kann mich gar nicht vorstellen. Also there is no topic that justifies this. It was always really stupid things, like the way you're loading the washer or you being
a bit upset about the conversation we had in the morning, or why are you in such a bad mood for being cold in your feet after sleeping in a tent? Like, it was such stupid things, and then just really triggering each other and not knowing how to communicate. And I really mean it. In the beginning, it was really hard to understand where the abusive impulse and the aggression was coming from, because my mom also was quite aggressive and not the most emotionally stable person. So it was like, it was difficult to pinpoint. Slowly, it became clear, like as you start hitting furniture, breaking stuff, and this was always him, it was never her. And as you find her crying in the room, more like, and him just like prancing about in the bottom floor, like, and yeah, like I remember once that like she told me some people stopped in the street because he was hitting like the wheel of the car and they were afraid for her. I remember that at some point I just, like with my father, just start feeling like, okay, he's for sure hitting her. We just don't know about it. And one time I heard a fight of theirs and she was saying like, what would your kids feel if they know that you hit me, you know? So again, as a kid, you feel it. It's much better to try to handle your own problems and your own shit before you have kids. Because even if you try to hide it, they feel it.
Die Frage ist, ob man jemals seinen ganzen eigenen Scheiß geklärt kriegt und ob man dann nicht irgendwann denkt so, ich kann niemals Kinder bekommen, weil irgendwas ist doch irgendwie so richtig, dass man psychisch total fit und gesund und denkt so.
But that's not your shit. Like, that's maybe like your unshowered parts. You know, like, your shit is stuff like this. Your shit is stuff like this. It's like big traumas, big triggers, big insecurities. Because this is shit. Like, what comes after this is an absolute shitstorm. Like, this is really wrong. Being a bit annoyed with work sometimes, being a bit stressed, being a bit unavailable, this is normal. This happens to everyone. And it's important for kids to see it. I think the important things for, especially, and I also have thought a lot about this after my last relationship, I think the important things for you to handle before you have kids are the things that completely make you lose control. Like in this emotional way, like completely make you lose control. Because it just makes kids scared when they see it. It doesn't make them feel their parents are human. The stresses, the silly arguments, like the tiny things, sure, makes them feel their parents are human and flawed. Mm-hmm. These things make them feel like they're responsible for their parents.
Falls du noch was hast, wo du denkst, das gibt's, das könnten da, hätten deine Eltern besser machen können, vielleicht hast du das aber gerade eigentlich auch schon gesagt, oder etwas, wo du denkst, dafür bist du total dankbar, dass es so gelaufen ist, wie es gelaufen ist.
I'm really at peace with how everything happened, actually. I'm so happy for the relationship I have with my parents nowadays. Like my mom, after this message, she said that the one thing she would change, like that cute Father's Day message, was like having been a better mother to me. And she did so much in her homework to not put herself in this position. She's still with my stepdad, by the way, but their relationship looks really different. And she did so much in her homework to not take things that she shouldn't and not feel herself image accepted for the problems that are clearly the other person's and not feel responsible for the other person. Like, so much, like, she's in a completely different place nowadays. And to see that she's in a completely different place, that she can look at the things she did wrong and accept them, and apologize for the things she wished she'd done better with us, you can't really ask for more. Like, there's nothing more healing than this. And it's also human, but in a way that kind of makes you feel like you can go above yourself. And you can always, you're always in time to still go above yourself. Yeah, I think that's what I really, really admire my parents for, like both of them in their own ways, just live life trying to do their best and have their best be a little bit better than it was the day before. I don't know, I like being made of parts of them, like it's such a cool heritage to have. The person I feel the worst about nowadays is actually my stepdad, you know, because like we don't have the, after I leave, like of course we don't have the relationship we had before. And he says it, he said it every now and then, that like he felt like he lost a daughter, and I know he means that. And it's really difficult to see abuse for what it is most of the times. It's someone who is also really hurt, really insecure, and not knowing how to handle it, like seeing the hurt that generates the abuse, seeing that it's not evil, it just has an evil Wirkung, you know, and managing to keep this empathy, I think that's also what makes it so painful and so hard to get out of. But now he's just so lonely. He's such a lonely guy. Like, he may still be with my mom, but he's such a lonely guy. And his relationship with his daughters when Noelle grew up is barely there. Which is like, it's heartbreaking. Because you're seeing a person who is not, doesn't have a bad heart, just does really bad things and didn't handle the inner homework they had to do. And now they're just stuck to the worst part of themselves with the people who love them the most. Like, it's really, now that everyone can protect themselves, it's just a really tragic experience of humanity. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Und trotzdem deine Mutter und er sind jetzt in einer besseren Beziehung.
I think this is sad to say, but partially because he is more lonely. So then she is like a very important support point. And also because she's, you know, like after I left, she was also like, okay, but I want to spend time with you, so I can't be there all the time. You know, like, okay, when you're with me, we're not there. The fact that she also got that sometimes she could leave, like out of this entire situation of me not living with him anymore, and that she understood that when things get too bad, she can leave. She started using that more often. And then she did proper therapy, started appreciating herself without needing his validation, and started being a lot better at imposing boundaries. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you don't stay when the fight escalates, when he's just calling you a bitch, you know, if you don't stay to try to get him to say something different, if you just leave, then you're not hit. Mm-hmm. This became her strategy, and like throughout time, and it's been a while, he doesn't behave like this anymore.
Und sie hat immer noch ihre Wohnung.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Sehr gut.
Exactly. Also, she said something that the more secure she was in herself, the less space he had to be abusive, which, it's a sentence I've come into so many other situations in my life. Like, the more secure you are in who you are and what you have to give, the less space other people have to affect you with their aggression.
Das ist eigentlich ein gutes Ende. Gibt es etwas, was du noch gerne sagen möchtest?
No, I don't think so. Like, this part of, you know, like this ellipsis of saying, but they worked through their things, like, was important for me to include, because I know in narratives of abuse, we crystallize people a lot in this aggressor and victim thing, and it's not that linear. They are like both important, but in a way reductive and cruel and dehumanizing titles. So to add this complexity was kind of important for me at the end, but
mm-hmm. Yeah,
there you go.
Okay, nach dem Gespräch mit Rita. Ich glaube, ich spüre gerade schon sowas wie eine Erleichterung auch durch die Geschichten, die Rita auch erzählt hat von den getrennt lebenden Eltern und von der ganzen Patchwork-Familiensituation und auch dadurch, dass Rita gesagt hat, dass sie denkt, dass Kinder schon stabiler sind, als wir denken und so eine Bewunderung habe für die Stärke, die sie gehabt hat, zu sehen, was sie auch richtig findet und das schon so früh auch, obwohl in der katholischen Schule und in der Erziehung, die sie außerhalb von den Eltern bekommen hat, ganz andere Werte gepredigt wurden, sie irgendwie zu dem gehalten hatte und schon so eine starke eigene Meinung und Ansichten hatte. Dann habe ich auch wieder etwas wie Neid oder Bewunderung, dass sie klar hat, dass sie eigentlich Kinder haben möchte und was sie bräuchte, um Kinder zu bekommen. Auch mit der Klarheit, das muss klar sein, die künstlerische Praxis muss weiter funktionieren. Es muss in einer Beziehung sein mit Menschen, die das akzeptieren. Und habe auch gemerkt, dass mir das auch sehr wichtig ist. Auch in unserem Gespräch danach fand ich noch voll interessant, also nachdem ich schon Stopp gedrückt hatte, nochmal zu reden, was für unterschiedliche Wohnideen und Konstellationen es eben geben kann, wie Menschen, die mit Kindern zusammen begleiten, leben und wohnen können und dass ja auch in ihrer eigenen Kindheit eben mit drei verschiedenen Wohnplätzen funktioniert hat und dass es halt schon traurig auch einfach ist, was für eingeprägte und was für verinnerlichte Bilder wir einfach haben von wie Familie schon auch in einer westlich zentrierten Sehweise irgendwie auszusehen hat. Ich denke mir wieder, oh, ich wäre auch noch mal gern 24 oder vielleicht noch lieber 21, dann hätte ich noch viel mehr Zeit, mir alles zu überlegen und hätte auch noch mal viel mehr Zeit, alles Mögliche zu tun, und das würde mich entspannen. Ja, und vielleicht so abschließend zu sagen, meine Motivation gerade ist wieder total angehoben. Ich hatte zwischendurch eher ein Motivationsloch und dachte mir so, meine Motivation liegt vielleicht bei 30%. Und jetzt würde ich schon sagen, ist sie wieder über die 50% drüber. Und gerade habe ich schon wieder Lust, mit kleinen Menschen zu leben und auch diese Neugierde. Rita hat so motiviert darüber gesprochen, auch wie das sein kann und wie crazy das einfach ist, wenn so ein kleiner Mensch in einem ranwächst und wie curious sie darauf ist. Und das hat mich auch total sofort angesteckt oder was in mir wieder wachgerufen. Das war Kinder oder keine, ein Podcast zu Gedanken, Erfahrungen, Einstellungen und Entscheidungen zum Thema Kinderkriegen, kinderfrei bleiben und Kinder begleiten.